It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Mike Finnerty. It's the second week of February, and welcome to what I'm calling our mid-term break show. We take a breath after a frantic start to the footballing year, and we try to get a handle on where we're at in the early stages of season 2022. First, though, a big shout out to the team formerly known as Kilmina, but who shall now forever be referred to as the All-Ireland Junior Club Champions. Yes, they're into day three of wearing that lovely mantle, and I've no doubt are enjoying the warm, fuzzy afterglow of the celebrations. They were spotted in Westport on the first few days. I gather they made an excursion to Ahagour and Castlebar today, some of them still wearing those beautiful salmon pink shirts. And who knows what tomorrow will bring. But from everyone on the pod, congratulations to Kilmina. They're an amazing GAA club from a beautiful part of the world. And when you consider there's no shop, there's no post office, and the only pub in the area, the Buckfield Inn, is currently closed. Well, it just puts into context how the GAA club have put the area on the map, the national map, in the last few days. You can read all about their history-making achievements in this week's Mayo News. Michael Gallagher played an absolute blinder up at Croke Park. We've also produced a brilliant special bonus podcast for all our Patreon members that's proving very popular. Rob Murphy was the man behind that pod and behind the microphone. And you can hear everyone from Peter and Jack Carney to Paul Grodin to Niall Feehan, to name but a few. Just head to patreon.com/Mayo Podcast to hear that show in all its glory. And if you like the sound of Mayo teams celebrating big wins in Croke Park, you will not be disappointed. Later on in this show, I'll be chatting to the one and only Stephen Drake about Kilmina's win. He was in Croke Park as well to watch all the drama unfold. And we'll also hear from John Riley, the winning manager, who first thing Monday morning was out feeding cattle and sheep back in Kilmina. No Monday morning club for John Riley, I can tell you. But first, on a week when we're not previewing a Mayo match in the National League, and instead we're taking stock of what we've seen so far, I'm delighted to be joined by two men who were in Clonus last Sunday to see Mayo win for the first time in 2022. Malachy Clerken of the Irish Times, and a man who needs very little introduction to our listeners, one of the best Gaelic football analysts in the country, friend of the podcast, Martin Carney. Lads, you're both very welcome to the show, and thanks for taking the time out to talk some football tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for asking me, Mike. Thank you. And how you doing, Malachy?
I'm very well, Martin. Very well.
Malachy, as a neutral.
Very neutral, yeah.
Insofar as you're a Monaghan man, of course, but in terms of the Mayo News Football Podcast, let's call you a neutral. Were you entertained by what you saw in Clonus on Sunday? Did you leave the ground with a spring in your step?
I mean, I was entertained when I saw Monaghan creating chance after chance after chance. I wasn't so entertained when I saw them miss them. It was a real February league game, wasn't it? Like, I think both teams were in the sort of form where they sort of know the road at this stage. You could see, although there was younger players on both sides, you could see they're two very battle hardened teams, and they kind of played each other to a standstill, I thought, for quite a bit of it. I thought in the end, like the very last play of the game was a hopeful ball across that Ryan McInnesby got a hand to and Paddy Durkin cleared off the line. And in a way, because Mayo had been so sort of professional all the way through the second half and Monaghan had been so kind of wasteful, you kind of thought, God, that would have been total robbery now had Monaghan got that goal and just taken it in the 76th minute. But then again, Monaghan had 13 shots in the second half and only scored 3 points. So what does that tell you? It tells you that they were at least making enough chances to win the game. I think in the end it was absolutely the right result. I thought Mayo took care of the ball better and, you know, used their possession more wisely. I think they only had four wides all day, something like that, maybe five. And so they did far more to, you know, take care of the result than Monaghan did. But I thought they were quite, you know, two fairly even teams. As I say, two very battle-hardened teams, you know, two very sort of professional league teams. Monaghan shooting has been all over the place for the first two games. They really should have beaten Tyrone. And if they had their shooting boots on Sunday, they probably could be on 4 points now. But I thought Mayo were good, like, you know, considering who they still don't have there, you know, to do that without Matty Ruan, to do it without Kevin McLaughlin, to do it without Killian O'Connor, obviously do it without Tommy Conroy, Owen McLaughlin going off early. You know, they have a good squad now. They really do. And it's great to see, you know, Brendan Harrison and Jason Doherty back and not even back as sort of bit part players. They're back and they're there and they're going to take a lot of shifting out of the team. So I think it was a really good result for Mayo. But I thought it was two fairly even teams for the time of year.
Malachy, really enjoyed your match report in the Times yesterday. As usual, it was top class. A couple of lines jumped out. You described Monaghan. They had spent the second half here burning through chances like a husband with a wandering eye. I would imagine that would resonate with quite a few of our listeners. And, the other one that caught my eye as well, the fact that Mayo won the match, anything less wouldn't quite have been grand larceny. Petty crime, maybe. And I think a lot of us would agree with that. Martin, anyone who heard you on Midwest will know you enjoyed the game.
Yes.
You've had a couple of days now to mull over it and to reflect on the performance. Can I put it to you like this, maybe? Have we seen anything from Mayo now in the last two games to make you think they're improving? Have they improved from game to game, do you feel, when you look at the body of evidence from the Donegal match and then on to the Monaghan game?
Well, maybe they certainly improved from the Donegal game, Mike. I mean, their display against Donegal, I thought, in the first half was lamentable. I mean, they went into that game at half time, I think, just 7 points to 3 down. And were it not from an exceptional performance, and I stress an exceptional performance from Rob Henley in that game, or in the first half in particular, they could have easily gone in 12 points down. Like, Donegal had Mayo where they wanted to in that first half. And even through the second half, you know, up to this halfway through the half, like when Michael Murphy misses penalty and Stephen Cohn gets sent off, Donegal were still in control of that match. But then whatever happened, you know, Donegal, I think, went something like 11 points to 6 up. From then on, I remember Ryan O'Donoghue getting an inspirational point, actually, where there were just three kicks of the ball from goalkeeper to midfielder to Donoghue, and he put it over the bar. That seemed to inspire people. You know, Patrick Durkin then and Jason Doherty got a couple of points. And then Henley held his nerve and kicked quite a magnificent point into the teeth of that gale with the last kick of the game to get a draw. And was there an improvement? Yes, in that game from one half to the other. It was just a complete turnaround in terms of form, in terms of application, and in terms of intensity. Now, I'd agree fully with Malachy the last day in the Monaghan game. I think in the first 10 minutes of that game, Monaghan handed the game to Mayo in some respects. I mean, they missed a glorious goal chance, and again, a Henley save prevented it. They dropped two or three balls into Henley's hands. They kicked, I think, a free against the post, all at times when they were owning the ball around the middle of the field and getting repeated ball forward.
And like I thought, Martin, in fairness, I thought they should have been 1-3 to a point up after 6 or 7 minutes.
That is correct.
You know, that was the tone of the day for them, really.
it was like, I mean, if you look at the if you look at the goal that Mayo got, like, I mean, so, you know, there's the it's part of the evolving thing we're seeing the process we're seeing in Mayo at the moment, in that James Horn is kind of trying out a lot of new lads. Now, Aidan Orr may not have shot the lights out the last day, but his assist for that first goal was commendable. In the way he persisted in winning back a ball that he had no right to win, and this setting up O'Donoghue, and O'Donoghue slipped the ball into the net. That was after 5 minutes, and that was totally against the run of play. But it gave Mayo that little bit of a cushion that kept him in touch for nearly all of the half. And if you consider the midfield battle, like, I mean, Darren Hughes and Niall Cairns owned the ball, and Monaghan owned the breaking balls in the sector in the first half, actually, or for most of the first half. So really, Mayo went in just a point down, having kind of manfully applied themselves, having been much more efficient than Monaghan. But Monaghan will rue the first 10 minutes of that half when, quite honestly, I think they should have built a winning score in that period.
Malachy, it was obviously a long winter down here as well. I suppose that's putting it mildly. So we're now two games into the league. Admittedly, it's a pretty small body of evidence. But based on what you saw on Sunday in the flesh, did you see anything to suggest that Mayo have learned maybe from the lessons of the All-Ireland final? There's something different about them, or was it more of the same? What's your gut instinct?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think it's obviously way too early to know that, you know, because boy, was it cold in Clonus on Sunday. And if you're drawing any analogy or through line from that to what it's going to be like in an All-Ireland final, it's a sort of a million miles away on every level. I think a few things.
What about 11 weeks for the Galway game, though, maybe?
Well, this is what I'm about to say, actually. Yeah. You know, I think on a certain level, you know, and I know you people in Mayo get very excited, but you have to realise what you have, you know. You are, you know, absolutely solid in the top four teams in the country. And I don't know if you've noticed what's going on in the rest of the league, but the top of that top four teams is getting a bit shaky, you know? So nobody is looking like All-Ireland winners right now. Is there a favourite? Probably Kerry are probably a favourite. But ye are starting from a very high base. And it's only going to be very, very little improvements that Mayo need. Some of that's going to be personnel. I mentioned them already, but Jason Doherty and Brendan Harrison are two proven All-Ireland level performers. That they're both playing, that they're both playing full games, that they're both contributing is huge, you know, or it is at least potentially huge come the championship. I think Ryan O'Donoghue continues to blossom, and I think it's a fantastic thing. Like, I thought he was, I know Keegan and Durkin were sort of their spiritual leaders on Sunday and sort of were at the heart of sort of driving them on. But Jesus, it's great to have a guy who wants every bit of it up front. And O'Donoghue wants it. You know, you can see he loves a good old tussle. He loves getting knocked about a bit. He loves having a bit of a row and a bit of a scrap. But he also is, like, that goal, okay, it fell to him and it was a bit of sort of comical slap-slip defending. Monaghan should have cleared the bloody ball. But when it came down to it, he had a half a second to decide what to do, and his little side foot, flat-footed Rory Beggan, put him the wrong way and he rode it into the corner. And that sort of clinical finishing is something that it's going to be really important to him. You know, this is a guy missed a penalty in an All-Ireland final by my estimation, trying to be too cute with it, trying to pick out the top corner when, you know, bang it into the bottom corner and it still counts for the same same score, Ryan, you know. And you have Killian O'Connor to come back into that, hopefully. You know, Horan does seem a bit mysterious as to what the time scale is there. And you have a midfield. Okay, Martin's exactly right. The midfield did get a bit cleaned out in that first half an hour until Aidan O'Shea came on for Stephen Cohen. But you still have a midfield there, and when Matty Rowan comes back in, that is full of running, full of catching ability, full of everything you need. This is the thing with Mayo. They don't need an awful lot more. You know, I know you say it's a long winter down there, and that's fine. But Mayo have been in the last two All-Ireland finals. You know, you're looking around the personnel and you're going, well, we might need a player here, we might need a player there. You're going to start the championship against Galway, and I would suggest that every Mayo player starting that day will have played in at least one All-Ireland final, if not two, if not, in some cases, five, six, and seven. You know, the very, very few teams can match that for experience. So Mayo don't need massive, massive increases in anything. You know, Mayo are there or thereabouts. They just need a little bit more. They need to play a smarter game when it matters, all of that sort of stuff that everybody knows. But like, Mayo aren't in the disaster zone. Trust me, there's many, many, many counties, including my own, would love a little trip around that disaster zone and love to be tearing our hair out over how bad our All-Ireland final performances are.
Yeah, Martin, I think a lot of Mayo people listening would agree with Malachy there. In fact, most of them would, that Mayo are obviously in that top bracket. And I suppose that's sometimes what leads to the frustration. We know how close they are. James Horan talks about the tweaks, the incremental improvement, the small changes that he's trying to make, because he knows as well there's no need, obviously, to rip it up and start again. But the injuries are starting to become more and more of a talking point. Killian O'Connor still working his way back. We haven't seen Enda Heshin or Oisín Mullen yet in the league. They're both rehabbing from injuries. We know Tommy Conroy is out for the season. Brendan Harrison limped off with what looked like a hamstring injury on Sunday. And I gather Owen McLaughlin's injury, not quite as serious as it looked initially. Again, as far as I can ascertain, nothing broken, nothing fractured, but he will be out for a few weeks, I'd imagine, at the very least. And when you take all of those guys out of the first 15, out of the 26, then you're going deeper into the squad. And when against that backdrop, I suppose, what have you made of the guys who have got their opportunities in the first two games? Who are the players that for you, when they've started or been brought in, have shown up, who have shown they might have something to offer come the 24th of April and beyond?
You see, that's one of the things I kind of credit James Horan with over the last few years. There's been this permanent evolution with the team. He's been trying players like for the last 3 years. But in answering your question, there's a number of guys who have been on that panel since 2017, the likes of Michael Plunkett, the likes of Conor O'Shea, guys like that who, you know, Conor Loftus is another one, Jordan Flynn, who have been given plenty of opportunities, who have been around the squad for five or six or more years now, and at no time have they ever actually put up their hand and said, we ought to be starting players. So I was looking last Sunday for a little bit extra from them to see how they performed. And I'd say every one of them, you know, like Michael Plunkett set up the goal for Jason Doherty, but then he got skinned, as far as I can recall, by Michael Brannigan for the Monaghan goal. You know, you just wonder where James Horan sees his future in the Mayo team. Like, he played him centre-back the last day. Interestingly, as an under-21 winner, I think in 2016, he was a forward. So, you know, maybe that versatility can still be an advantage to him insofar as the James Horan can play him up front. Conor O'Shea at midfield the last day, I thought, scored a beautiful point from distance. You know, worked hard, but it wasn't until his brother Aidan came in, that he started to actually get more involved in the game. And that, again, Malachy mentioned the midfield pairing, you know, the midfield options that Mayo have. I think if Mayo are to use Aidan O'Shea, they use him in a defensive midfield role. to me, he doesn't play like a forward, understand how to play like a forward, or have the instincts of a forward. Whereas I believe myself in the midfield to halfback area, he's outstanding. His physical presence, his tackling ability is second to none in the country. And his distribution and ability to control the rhythm of the game is excellent. Okay, some people say he slows the game down, but he slows it down for a reason. And even, again, going back to Maliki's point, earlier, the last 10 minutes of normal time, the last 6 or 7 minutes of normal time the last day, he was at the core of that, orchestrating that particular, managing the end game, so to speak, for Mayo. And I think he was very good there. But up front then, Sean McDonagh, I was at the Sigerson game last Tuesday night in Galway, where Galway beat Letterkenny, went up to it just for a dander, like. And, I didn't notice much of Finn McDonagh in that game. I didn't notice much of him last Sunday, even though, again, like Conor O'Shea, he kicked an excellent ball, an excellent point from distance. I love Padraig O'Hara. I thought, his last year, maybe it wasn't, or the year before, was the first year he's been in it. But now he's starting to actually establish himself as a fullback, or, as a member of a fullback line and a player of consequence. And his physicality and his willingness to get involved in that aspect of game. And interestingly, there's a lovely photograph, I think was it in the Times, Maliki, where he is actually in a huddle with a group of players. And it is he who's giving the instruction. Aidan O'Shea's in that, James Horn's in that. But it's O'Hara that is actually kind of, shall we say, calling the shots as to what should happen. So he is a positive. Aidan Norman, the corner, Maliki, you mightn't have seen him at club level, but he was very, very good for Knockmore, I thought, in the championship. Now, he's another one that has been giving a chance right now. I thought his intelligence in finding O'Donoghue for that goal was commendable. He is a good user of a ball, but again, he's going to need, I think, 2 or 3 years to establish himself. Physically, he doesn't look the part yet, but I think football-wise, he's an awful lot to answer. So, yes, there's quite a few injuries, but a lot of the young lads, the younger of the younger lads, I think, have something to offer. It's those guys who have been around 4 or 5 years. They're the guys that I'm looking for something from in order to kind of, that they would put up their hands and say, it's time, James, that you give me a start.
I think, Martin, you hit on a point there with, and I'd say you're talking about half a dozen players. And a year right. like this is really vital for them. It's a really massive year for somebody like Conor Loftus, who has been around, say, 2016
under 21 team,
and in and out. I thought he found a real good niche for himself last year. Last year, I thought he had a really good year, but man, he had a shocking All Ireland final. Like, he just had one of those days where absolutely nothing that he put his hand to went his way and became emblematic of what the day became for Mayo. Wasted opportunities, wrong decisions, that real old Mayo failing of not setting your feet before you shoot and shooting a wee bit off balance, even though you had time to settle yourself, that sort of stuff. So he has a big year. A, because of the age he is, I guess he's what, about 26-ish, maybe, I don't know his exact age, but
he's 26, 27, you're right, Maliki, yeah.
But also to, fight his way back from a really sort of, a day that can scar you, not only did your team lose, but you had a bad, bad day. So you have to come back from that. So I think it's a big year for somebody like him. I was interested, actually, and I wouldn't keep as close an eye on it as you guys would, but, Fionn McDonagh was in the first wave, I thought, of Mayo players who were going to be the next decent Mayo forward.
That's right.
Before, say, Ryan O'Donoghue, before Oisin Mullins' year, all of that. So Fionn McDonagh had a year put in ahead of all of that and was fantastic, but he kind of went off the scene then. I don't know, was he hurt for a year?
Yeah, he's been injured for a lot of the last 2 years, Maliki. Yeah, he's had a horrible time with injury.
I always thought he was a really classy player and had real pace and a bit of guile, and it was, you know, could work as a really good sort of user of the ball in that half forward line. And actually, Martin, I'll just go back to one last point to what you were saying about Aidan O'Shea. And like, I've said this for a while about Aidan O'Shea, that to me, it's a kind of a, it's a failure of imagination if they can't find a role for him. You know, that he has far too many times in the last couple of years been in games, All-Ireland final, All-Ireland semi-final last year especially, been in games where he looked like a poor footballer, which he isn't. He's not a poor footballer. He has a skill set, as you point out, Martin, that, you know, the game of Gaelic football has to find a, there has to be room for it. You know, okay, he doesn't do box to box in 4 seconds, but his catching ability, his ball handling ability, his ability to screen possession, his ability to garner possession and keep it for his team, his ability to run the tempo of the game around the middle of the field. You mentioned, you know, okay, he might be slow, he might slow the thing down. To be very frank about it, there are very much times when Mayo could do with somebody to slow the game down. You know, it's you know, we all know that the passages of play that we remember from Mayo over the last 10 years are when the needle goes into red and it's absolute chaos and the stadium is buzzing and everything is helter-skelter. And then what happens? Mayo give away a bloody goal somewhere along the way because nobody has taken control of it. They perform better than every other team in that chaos. That's where, you know, when they bring it to that overdrive level, that's when they overwhelm teams, and they've overwhelmed the best teams in patches over the past 10 years. But a little bit more control is what they've needed at times. So to me, as I say, it's almost a failure of imagination on behalf of management or on behalf of, and I include Aidan in that as well. If you can't find a way, a role for him that incorporates all those ball skills he has, his immense size, his willingness to suffer contact and suffer battery, but don't try and make him what he isn't. You know, Jesus Christ, he's around long enough now. Everybody knows he's not a forward. You gotta find a different role for him. And that role, I think you're right, Martin, that role of patrolling around the defensive midfield area, that when Keegan and Durkin go forward,
yeah. Yeah.
I got you, lads. I'm gonna put out the fires back here and, you know, go with God, go in peace. I have this. They've got to find a way to do that.
Want even more Mayo Football podcasts? Become a member of our Patreon club to get bonus pods, join our Discord chat group, and ask us anything about Mayo football. All for just €5 a month plus VAT. Go to patreon.com/Mayo podcast.
Can I ask you, Martin, actually, Malachy mentioned Lee Keegan there, and I really wanted to ask you guys this question. He reappears last Sunday for the first time in 10 weeks. Hadn't played a game for about 10 weeks since the county semi-final with Westport. And he goes out and he just does his thing. Starts in the full back line, sort of patrols around at his own pace. Probably is lucky in one sense that he hasn't to pick up McCarron or Mohan. He's in that sort of floating role. But then beginning of the second half, Rory Brickington goes into the full back line. And with Owen McLaughlin gone off, Keegan's put at wing back and he absolutely comes into his own. He's really unlucky not to get the point. And Martin, there's been so much talk down here for the last year or more about robbing Peter to pay Paul. Lee Keegan plays so much football in the full back line, it takes away so much from the half back line. When you saw him out in the half back line last Sunday with so little done in terms of match practice and game time under his belt, and to see what he brings, where do you stand now on that argument that, you know, for Mayo to be successful again in 2022, Keegan needs to play more football higher up the field? Or can you see the other side of the argument that when you take Keegan away from the full back line, we have a problem.
Yeah, like it's interesting, you know, he had nothing done, you were saying. I just happened to be driving through Westport a few weeks ago on a very bad day, and I saw this fellow out road running, and, you know, just kind of keeping himself ticking over. He's an immense footballer. He's one of these guys, the bigger the occasion, the better he plays. And last Sunday, I thought again, and going back to the beginning of the game, where the three full forwards in the Monaghan team, Jack McCarron, Gary Mohan in particular, and Andrew Woods, they were outstanding in the roasted, I thought, Keegan, O'Hara and Harrison. They, you know, Monaghan did an awful lot of ball through to Mohan, but and I thought he was very, very effective. It's my first time seeing him, to be honest about it, Malachy. But right, when Keegan was moved to the half-back line in the second half, and when he got into overdrive, he was delightful to watch. He never seems to be kind of running fast, and yet he's eating up ground to beat the band. And he's just one of those players, it has been a privilege to watch the guy over a long period of time. You see, he's gifted in many ways. He's a fabulous man marker when he puts his mind to it. Like, you know, you can recall the great tussles he had in the past with Dear McConnelly. You know, they were worth the entrance fee alone to watch the two of them at one another. But his ability to know when to attack, apart from his ability, apart from that wonderful running power he has, knowing when to attack, knowing when to link with others. Like, their qualities and their gifts that I think Mayo cannot spurn and cannot ignore. And maybe they'll have to kind of, in a sense, create that role for him rather than giving him a role where he's asked to negative the effectiveness of somebody on the other team.
I think there's a couple of things with that. I think you're exactly right, Martin, that he's a brilliant man marker. But I always fear for Mayo when he's having to do a man marking job in the full back line. He's a brilliant man marker out the pitch, where, you know, he can
good point.
Shadow somebody
good point, yeah.
in undangerous areas, and if somebody gets away, there's somebody behind. And but Jesus, you know, we all remember Con O'Callaghan absolutely destroying him
in the full back line.
Mm-hmm. But beyond that, the thing with him in the full back line is you're essentially solving a problem the opposition might have by taking him out of the half-back line. If you're an opposition team playing against Mayo and you see Lee Keegan in the half-back line, well, you have to plan for that. You have to go into the game going, right, let's say it's Monaghan, Micheál Bannigan, you have to follow Keegan back the pitch. He's a problem for the opposition playing from wing back. When he's in the full back line, okay, there will be times when he'll get up the pitch, but it'll be far fewer, and it automatically solves a potential hassle for the opposition. The only, and this is a good thing for Mayo, Oisin Mullen solves a couple of problems there. You know, Oisin Mullen can play in the half-back line or the full-back line. I don't know what they're going to do with him, but they need to decide on one level what they want from him. Do they want... I would have him more as... If you need one of those Rolls-Royce players in the full-back line, you'd nearly have him and leave Keegan to maraud from the half-back line.
Lads, I love talking football with you, and we could definitely stay here all night, and we will have to do this again, I think. But we're going to run out of tape, I think, if we don't taper it off. Just one or two quick ones to finish, Martin. The next game, I mean, it's the one that we're all looking forward to since the fixtures came out Saturday night, February the 19th, under lights, Croke Park, a chance to do it all over again with the Dubs. What are you looking for? What will you be looking to see? The bar is going to be raised. I know Dublin aren't going well. They've got off to a terrible start. Their demise is being written up and talked up all over the place. But what will you be looking to see from Mayo that night?
Well, I'd be looking to see, for example, some of the younger lads being given an opportunity to play again, the likes of Aidan Orme, the likes maybe Rory Brickington and Brian Walsh, and seeing how they perform in that type of atmosphere, because you'll have 40,000, 50,000 there, I'd imagine, that night. Saturday night, there'll be a huge Mayo crowd going up for the weekend. I'd be looking to see those guys get an opportunity. Another thing I'd love to see Mayo coming up with another goalkeeper. They have an issue with goalkeeping. Their goalkeeper that they have at the moment is outstanding. But if he gets injured, who have they got to cover? Like, they've given a game or two to Rory Byrne, and I feel myself that he ought to be given a big game to actually just kind of test his mettle and see how he works out. But obviously, I want to see them beat Dublin again. I don't think myself that Dublin are anywhere near the beaten docket that many people have stated that they are. I thought the last night, like when you think of the poor skill execution that deprived Dean Rock of a goal, the bad sideline decision that created or that gave Kerry a goal, and then they you know, the fact that I think they conceded 1-8 when they were down to 14 men. You know, a lot of things went wrong from the last night that they didn't recover from. But I think they will use the next night against Mayo to try and go into rehab mode and to actually just more or less remind everybody that they're still around and they still intend to be around for quite a while. But in Mayo's case, want to see the young lads continue to get an opportunity, want to see them as competitive and as efficient as they have been up to now, but and want to see them win as well, obviously.
Malachy, everyone knows imitation is the sincerest form of flattery and all that. I know the lads on the football pod on Off the Ball love their power rankings. And I'm going to leave the last word to you. If you were to tot up your top four, top five power rankings right now based on the first two rounds of the National League, yeah, list them out for me there maybe. Where do Mayo sit based on what you've seen? Armagh, I'm guessing, sitting pretty at the top, surely. Yeah, let's
I don't think you really need to do the power rankings. It is a league. We do have a table for this sort of stuff.
Can we believe the league table? We can.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, it's very accurate in what we've seen so far. Armagh have been the best team. Dublin have been the worst team. And everybody else is sort of finding their own slot in between. I think the game in Croke Park is very important for one reason beyond everything else. Every player in that Dublin squad, apart from some of the very newest players, but for every one of them, all they know about league games against Mayo is that it's an easy 2 points. Mayo haven't beaten them in the league since 2012. They haven't even run them close. There hasn't been a close game, a nail-biting game in the league between them, I think almost since 2012. It has been the easiest 2 points of every league that Dublin have played in the last 10 years is Mayo, and especially Mayo and Croke Park. So if the Mayo do nothing else, then they have to go to Croke Park. They have to give Dublin their absolute fill of it. Fine if it comes down to last minute and, you know, Con O'Callaghan is playing and gets a last minute point to win, you know, fine, whatever. But they have to, Dublin are a weakened animal here. Martin is right. Obviously, they're not, you know, much like Mayo are fairly solid in the top four. Dublin, of course, are very solid in the top four, and they're not going to, you know, they're not going to fall too far. But they are there to be shown. They have shown their vulnerable side at the minute. It is there to be exploited. If Mayo can't beat them here, in this situation, I did a piece for the paper yesterday. In the last 15 seasons, Mayo have gone unbeaten in their first two league games 4 times. This is the 4th time. And the other 3, they made the league final. So Mayo tend to finish the league well if they start the league well. If they don't start the league well, they tend to just muddle through to the end of it. They've started well. They're unbeaten after 2 games. Dublin are all over the shop. Martin is right. You know, there were mitigating circumstances to a certain extent, but again, the table doesn't lie too much. They are dead bottom of the league, with a minus 12 points difference after two games. That's a team that is not playing well, that doesn't know what it's at, that is making stupid mistakes that it didn't used to make. Mayo need to go to Croke Park and show them, yeah, exploit it. Show, you know, no mercy. Dublin have feasted on vulnerable Mayo league teams over the past 10 years. Mayo have to go there, give them a taste of their own medicine and head away back west going, well, we know what we're doing and they can worry about what they're doing.
That stat that Malachy has just delivered there is, I think, what the cool kids call a mic drop. it's one of many reasons why we ask you on the pod, Malachy. You're going to leave Mayo people giddy with excitement now about league finals and all the rest, lads.
Excitement until they do it, obviously.
Glad to have you back.
A real pleasure, lads, to talk football with you. Martin Carney and Malachy Clerkin, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the podcast tonight.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Malachy. Right, pleasure meeting you, lads. Take care. Bye-bye.
Want even more Mayo football podcasts? Become a member of our Patreon club to get bonus pods, join our Discord chat group, and ask us anything about Mayo football. All for just €5 a month plus VAT. Go to patreon.com/Mayo podcast.
So that was Malachy Clerkin of the Irish Times and Martin Carney. This is Stephen Drake, and we're going to chat for the next while about Kilmina. Drakey, the Kilmina lads, by all accounts, are having the time of their lives. They're All-Ireland champions. They're working their way around West Mayo slowly and surely with three cups in tow. What about you? What have the last few days been like for you as you reflect on what you saw on Sunday? I heard your immediate thoughts on the on the members pod, obviously, you were suitably impressed. But now that you've had a chance for the dust to settle, was it one of the great days for Mayo football, for Mayo club football? Because it sounded like it.
Yeah, it was, Mike. You know, and it was an interesting situation to be in as a supporter, because I hadn't been to any of those finals before, so. I know some Mayo teams have gotten to that stage, Kilmina themselves, and if you think back to Davits in the intermediate, one or two others had gotten to that stage before. So it was my first experience of that final. So those finals, and I'd never really, you know, I didn't know what to expect in terms of atmosphere and sort of the pageantry of it. And, you know, you always think you go to Croke Park, there's only one part of the stadium full. You wonder, is it going to have an impact or whatnot on the atmosphere? But I couldn't get over the atmosphere at the game at the weekend. And obviously there was four sets of supporters there, Steelstown as well, and Trim, along with Neepgwilla and of course Kilmina. But it was just a marvelous occasion. You know, it really was. I was just so impressed with it all. And obviously, you know, from a Mayo perspective, from Kilmina perspective, it's utterly historic. You know, the first Mayo club to win an All-Ireland junior title, tremendous for their, for, you know, for the area, for the club. You know, the club is on the go a long time now. And again, you know, we've spoken about sort of they've been at sort of that level for a period, and they did get back there in 2003. But I do think there is a special atmosphere around this team. And I do get the sense, you know, that from their perspective, this is a step on the ladder for them. It's obviously a huge step and a historic step. But, you know, I listened to John Riley's interview as well after the game at the weekend, and he spoke about getting back to it over the next couple of weeks, the next 5 or 6 weeks. So that just shows you the mindset of this group, which is great to see. Because, look, in clubs, you know, these things can come in cycles at certain times. It happened for Ballyhadrin, it happened for us. You know, you get a time and an opportunity where you accumulate a great bunch of players along with a really, really good management team. And you have to try and take advantage of those situations and make the most of those situations. So I really, from their perspective, I really get a sense that this is the beginning of the journey for them. It's not an end point, so to speak. But it was a historic day, and it was wonderful to be there as a Mayo supporter, supporting a Mayo club, and having a positive sort of, you know, finish to the whole situation. Yeah, it was a really, really enjoyable and joyous day. Yeah.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be there when Cross Malina made the breakthrough in 2001, and I was there when the Stephenites brought home the Andy Merrigan as well. 5 years later, and they're great days, and you get to experience and be on the edge of what it means to a club and to the guys who trained these guys at underage and brought them up through the ranks. And that was something that really came across, I thought, in the interviews with Peter Carney and John Riley, who we'll hear in a couple of minutes as well. But from the actual point of view of the game itself, Drakey, obviously a lot of our listeners will be keen to get a handle on, you know, who were the Kilmeena players? Obviously, Jack Carney gets man of the match, but who were the Kilmeena players for you that really stood up and delivered big performances? It's a team game, it's a squad game, we get all of that, but who were the players for you that really delivered when the chips were down?
Yeah, and look, I think, you know, one aspect of this is, you know, like everyone on the team contributed. You know, you don't win on Ireland's, you don't win games of this magnitude without everyone, you know, sort of putting, you know, having their moments and you know, having sort of good aspects to their game. And I think obviously, you know, in terms of endeavor and heart, every single guy that took to the field for Kilmeena absolutely left every ounce of himself out there. But like from my perspective, and sort of the guys that really sort of shone, and obviously on both sides, you know, Niamh Gwilla and Kilmeena, both defences were very much to the fore at the weekend. And look, across their entire backline, Kilmeena had stellar performers. You know, John Keane, for me, I thought he struggled a small bit early on to get a handle on Shane O'Sullivan. And Shane O'Sullivan had a really good game in the semi-final, and he did look like a very lively player and a dangerous player. But like after the first 10 minutes, you know, John Keane had a marvellous game after that. You know, gave Sullivan very, very little. John Ryan in the corner, like, you know, and again, he gets pulled out the field, you know, tracking a third man or whatever. If someone on the opposition goes deeper, he was tremendous, Mike. And he's been tremendous in any game I've seen him this year, I have to say. You know, such a tigerish player, you know, so strong in the tackle, you know, technically very good defender, but really, really comfortable on the ball out the field, you know, got on plenty of ball, can shift it either side, good hands, good kicker of the ball on occasion if it's needed. And, you know, he certainly puts himself about out there. Their half-back line had a really good, you know, their half-back line was very, very solid. I thought Niall Feehan was outstanding. He really was from start to finish. And especially, you know, when the chips were down, Mike, in extra time, you know, he had a hand in both the scores in the second half of extra time for Joey Smith, and obviously the clincher then for Darragh Keaveney. So he had a fabulous game. I thought, obviously, Jack Carney was head and shoulders. We know that, but Neely Duffy came in alongside him, and I thought ran himself to a standstill, came off, nearly had to be carried off with about 10 minutes to go, kicked a great point. And up top, you know, look, they all had their moments. I thought Keith Joyce started the game very well and finished the game exceptionally well, and picked up a bit of an injury, but went at it. Conor Madden, and I said it on the pod the last day, at times he can be a bit infuriating, but my Lord, you know, did he leave it out there in terms of his work rate, his effort? He must have turned over 6 or 7 balls. And then inside, look, the real touch of class, Darragh Keaveney, 6 points, you know, 4 frees, kicked his frees very well, kicked 2 points from play. And look, Niall Ryan again, I was disappointed for Niall Ryan, because he started so well and was a really, really strong point to their attack. And he was playing very, very deep. They played a triangle there with the two boys outside, Niall, and he was running some great ball early on, and there was guys, you know, moving off him. And then he picked up an injury, and it sort of negated their sort of attacking plan after that. But he, you know, for as long as he could, he kept at it. Look, they and you could pick out all the guys, Mike. You could pick out all good things that they all did. But for me, you know, John Ryan, Niall Feehan, Neely Duffy, Darragh Keaveney, Keith Joyce, and special mention as well to Joey Smith, who came off the bench and was just sensational. Kicked 2 unbelievable points. The second one, a spinner off the left from the 45-yard line. Yeah, great, great stuff.
Yeah, I think we're at a stage in our life now, Drakey, where the achievements of Neely Ryan and Pat Mulcrone, we always like to focus in on them. Neely Ryan, 38 years of age, played in 03 when they lost the final. still trucking nearly 20 years later. And as you said, gets injured early on, but by God, plays his part to win the medal. And Pat Mulcrone, who got hurt as well, I gather, in the last few weeks and was still part of the panel and played a big part in the background as well. What a day for those lads.
Absolutely unbelievable, Mike. Like, Neely, I think, now I could be wrong, but we played Kilmina in an under 21 county final back in 2002. And I think Neely Ryan played in that game against us. I remember Davy Feehan and Danny Ryan were playing on that team as well. Over in McHale Park. So that's how far it's going back. Same age as myself. It's absolutely brilliant to see. It's brilliant to see a guy, you know, get his reward for all his years of service. But it's certainly not token, like, you know, he's still a serious footballer. He's still well able to play. He's obviously kept himself in great shape. You know, and it just goes to show, if you are a player of quality, you do look after yourself, you can continue and you can still function at that age. It gives myself, you know, a great heart when you see guys like that as well. And look, what can you say about Pat Mulcrone, Mike? You know, my God, like, you know, if I can walk in my 50s, I'll be happy, let alone play football. It's just absolutely incredible. It's incredible that man is still there, still at it. And you should look, he's an All-Ireland medal now, you know, and you know, any man who plays into their 50 deserves an All-Ireland medal, to put it that way, you know, and I'm delighted for the two of those guys.
Yeah, big time. I'll tell you, let's take a listen to the Kilmina manager, John Riley. You can hear loads of interviews on our bonus pod, patreon.com/Mayo podcast. Rob Murphy, you talk about the Kilmina lads running themselves to a standstill. Rob Murphy ran himself into the ground in Croker as well. But let's give you a taste of the Kilmina manager, John Riley. Not just a super manager, a great coach, but by God, he can talk football as well. Here he is.
All right, John, delighted to get the chance to chat to you. We've just mentioned you, myself and Stephen Drake. You know him well.
I know Drakey well, yeah. Fair play to him. He's a good fan of mine now at the moment. And fair play, we had good times back in NUI, and he was a great footballer, and he's a good mind for it, you know what I mean? And it's great to hear him on the podcast singing my praises.
Yeah, well, in fairness, I mean, it's too easy to sing your praises right now as an All-Ireland winner. Management is an incredibly... you know, at times unrewarding process, I'd say, and there's a lot of commitment. You were saying the Mayo News this week, you barely see your partner and daughter at times, but like, talk me through like these moments that you're just special moments you could only dream of maybe at the start.
Well, for a moment now, it's actually, look at you, does it make you any different after winning All-Ireland? You feel contented because this is 4 years of work. This is not just have something happen last year. And our ultimate aim wasn't to, you know, always go win an All-Ireland or win a county title, or it's to develop and improve all the time. And we have that with young lads coming through. And we had a player base there that just wanted to learn and they wanted to develop the whole time. And it was 4 years ago when we started it. And we knew we had the fellas, the players, and the know-how to get there. And look, we did it today, we did it working hard. And that's the you know, the motto of the lads is you just come to work, enjoy it and come to work.
Did the setbacks at this stage... they form a big part of the success, because obviously you didn't win the junior title as fast as you wanted to, but like, they've formed a part of the journey, haven't they?
Look, you'll hear all the motivations of failure builds you. You know what I mean? I can remember losing to Ackle in 2018 in the county semi-final, and I didn't take Ackle at their merit that time. They'd done the homework on us. I went back and learned about that, and then you look then at 2019. Then we lost the semi-final against Kilmaine. You go and you learn on that, and then we went to the final against Kilmaine in that, and maybe things happened for luck because there was no All-Ireland tilt then or Connacht chance then, so maybe that was meant to be. But the way it is, you learn from your failures and you get better, and I think the failure is quitting and just lying down on it. But what we've proven here is that you just have to keep at it. And look, at what I'm doing now might be relevant in 5 years time, but we'll enjoy this for the now. But when we come back in about 4 or 6 weeks, we go back to work.
You love this now, but I'm going to say it to you. The lads were in a huddle after full time, and you were all in there. And I know I've heard what you said, reset, go again. But I saw them form another huddle just themselves afterwards. and it was like they took control, especially after conceding that point early in extra time. And they produced 26 minutes of the best extra time football in the final I've ever seen in terms of control, composure, no mistakes. It was incredible.
Well, the measure, when they cross the white line, they are in control. You know, we're bit parts. We're trying to influence a little bit. We're there to objectively look at the game as well and provide motivation and discipline and where we can improve on. And when we said start again, like, it's very easy when that goal went in is trying to hang someone out of it. That's not the point. The boys said, we start again. And when they went back into that huddle, they knew their job. Every man knows their job. You know, they've worked on it. And it's, look at things. We've got steadily better as we went on through the Mayo Championship and into the Connacht Championship. And out there was just that was our peak. And you could see an extra time. I thought in the first, that maybe they could come good and they got a point and they were running. But you could just see them. They were empty. They were absolutely empty. And our boys got stronger and stronger. Derek Keaveney's both calves cramped. He got off the pitch and back on the pitch and he won a ball. Do you know, it's phenomenal stuff. Keith Joyce.
He was on one leg.
Yeah. Keith Joyce hit everything that was there. He tackled everything. He was phenomenal today. For me, he was the man of the match, just what he went through. And look at Joyce Mike came out and he was a pure menace in there. You know, high ball went in and that put them on the back foot. But every lad stood up there. Chris McGlynn, he was off, he came back on. I told him his game wasn't done, and to him, to vindicate himself, to come back in, isn't that going to make him even better? Paddy Kane, one of the most intelligent cornerbacks that we've ever had in the club, came out and had a massive game. Do you know, John Kane, I could name them all, yeah. But it's been phenomenal. And look at the backroom team, John Doherty, Peter Carney, Sweets, they're phenomenal. You know, we all know our role. We're all working together. We all have the same goal in mind. It's getting the boys better all the time. You know, we've conceded an average of 6 points a game in the championship, and John Dotts is our defensive coach. You know, and we work on that. I work tightly with him on that, but he's the driver on that. Owen Sweeney was working on the technical skill stuff, really working on that kind of flair. Now, we did say today, technically, we could have been a little bit better, but phenomenal. Peter Carney, you know, he's the principal. You know, he's like myself. I like to have everything to the T and the itineraries done out and all that kind of stuff. But he took on the goalkeeper coaching, and we got Tom Higgins down this year, and he did a bit of work with them. But those guys have been phenomenal. And then again, you know, we can praise him to the club. John McDonald, Pádraig Moore, Mary Slattery, this week they've left me alone and they just let me get on with it, and they did an amazing job to organise. We took two buses up, we took the minors with us who've been training with us. You know, that's a massive ask, and those minors, they prepared like players today. Yesterday, they weren't messing around. They ate with the lads, they talked to the lads, they were in bed at 10:30 last night. You know, I was walking the corridor, it reminded me I was like one of the prefects in Jarlett's back in the day, saying get into bed. I didn't have to tell anyone that, you know. So it's just been phenomenal, and the way they're acting there. And look, I got a chance to bring Aidan, my young lad, out onto the pitch today. He was crying
mind in the cup right now.
He was crying because he thought he couldn't get on. I went up and fair play to Croke Park. They looked at me and looked at him and said, we've got to let that young lad on. And that's a connection for him. Do you know what? He's connected to the club now. He loves it. And he said, we've 3 cups now. And we're in the belly of the beast here. And I want to come back and play on the pitch myself. And isn't that great? You know, that's the end of the day. It comes back down to that. And look at our motto is we play with joy. At times today, it looked like our joy wasn't there, but we had to go workmanlike at it. But at the end of it, you could see it was pure joy to play there for the lads.
The defence was joyous to watch for me. I just absolutely blown away by the discipline and the work rates. I'm glad you mentioned that. Listen, what's it like? All these, like, most clubs in Ireland don't get to experience this. I can't imagine it with my own club. Hopefully one day it might. To turn around and see the black and white, your colours packed in, and then you look at all those faces and you know them all from every corner of the parish. What's that like?
Well, just before I go on to that point, just that we turned their ball over 30 times today.
Is that the stat?
30 times,
I could not believe how well you played.
But on our sides, they turned over 27.
They were also brilliant defensively.
Oh, players. It was unbelievable. It was bouncing from side to side. Do you know, but look, to come out here in Croke Park, for me, it felt like going on to any stadium in Mayo, just to see the colour. I didn't think about it as Croke Park. I felt like I was at home, you know, with all the colour there and the people. I don't think there's a sinner left in the place. But look at it, it's phenomenal. And I think to any club there, like, is, you know, you have to dream, but dreams are by the way. You have to put in the work with the underage, the structures. You have to have good people involved. You have to have positive people. People are willing to take failure and knockbacks. Look at, there's people here when I said I wanted to do, I had a vision for the club. People have said you're daft. And you have to start somewhere. You know, shoot for the moon and land on top of the mountain. And that's what we've done today.
We're not far off the moon.
We're nearly there. Yeah.
So gotta go. Talk to us. Enjoy the celebrations. Well done.
So that's John Riley. And I mentioned it earlier on, back feeding cattle and sheep, I gather, first thing Monday morning. That won't come as any surprise to you, Drakey.
No. Now, I'm not sure he'd been able to tell which were the cattle and which were the sheep. But no, look, it doesn't. Like, John has a ferocious work ethic. Look, delighted for him, but he's a serious coach, Mike. He's a serious thinker about the game. Would leave no stone unturned. And look, they look. They're a very, very fit team, and they look a really well coached team. You know, in terms of their restarts, their set plays, their attacking patterns, how they set up defensively. Look, they're a really, really well coached team, and that's what you'd love to see as well. You love to see young coaches in Mayo come to the fore and really put a team out. And when you see a really young team come out with something about them and a real system and an ethos in terms of how they're playing the game, that reflects fantastically well back on a manager and his management team. And special mention to Owen Sweeney and Carney as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. All the other guys there as well. So, you know, he's obviously put together a great bunch and a great group there. I hope he goes from strength to strength with this team. I'd love to see how John develops. I think he's one of the brightest young coaches in Mayo. It would be great to see him sort of get involved with Mayo at some stage, if that's something he wants to do. I certainly think he has the ability and the wherewithal to do that. And Mayo should be looking at that as well, looking at sort of nurturing these high quality young coaches in the county. But look, yeah, tremendous for him, brilliant for them. And watch this space. I really think they'll go places. And I said it, I tweeted it at the weekend. I stuck my neck out. I think they'll be senior in the next 2 to 3 years if they keep that group together.
Yeah, that's something I want to ask you about just before we finish. But you mentioned his management team there, and John was the first to single them out for praise. You've got John Doherty, who does such great work with the defense. Peter Carney, Jack's dad, what a character Peter is. I gather had Tom Higgins down helping out with the goalkeeping coaching, and then Owen Sweeney, his third national title win at Croke Park. He was involved in a Mayo Ladies All-Ireland win. He was involved with the Mayo Miners in 2013. And anybody who knows GA and Mayo knows Sweets, a Ballycroy man, but an adopted Kilmina man, I think, now at this stage. And he's played a big part in their success as well. Drakey, just to finish though, two things I wanted to ask you about. Firstly, that point you were making about Kilmina, and everybody will be watching now to see where do they go from here. They're obviously up to intermediate, which is a notoriously tough competition to win. And then if they can get that golden ticket at some stage in the next few seasons, they go up and probably try and do a ball on it and go up and compete at senior and stay at senior. But a lot of clubs have tried to do what Ball did and haven't been able to. It's not as straightforward as it sounds. It's not as easy as it looks. If it was, every club would be at it. So what's the biggest challenge in a nutshell for you that Kilmina will face in 2022 in terms of trying to build on what they did last Sunday?
Yeah, well, the first thing will be, mindset. Right. You know, that's a massive thing. Now, this group seems to have a very good mindset and a strong mindset. But obviously, you know, off the back of such a successful year, you know, won everything in front of them, 3 cups. There'll be a lot of people in their ears, you know, slapping their backs, telling them how good they are over the next couple of weeks. So it is very important that, you know, the group as a whole keeps a singular focus in terms of what they look and they want to do. So I'd imagine they'll get them back together in the next few weeks, and they'll line out sort of the roadmap in terms of 2022 and sort of their goals and where they want to get to. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing is, and I think obviously they have plenty of scope here because they're very, very young, but they're, you know, once you move up the levels, Mike, there is a drastic increase in terms of the physicality, and there's a drastic increase in terms of what you're facing in terms of probably setup and the way teams operate. So, you know, look, the room and the space Kilmina got last year, the scores they were putting up last year, that sort of space will not be afforded to them at intermediate level. Let's be quite frank about it. So they're going to have to come up with new ways of playing, and they're going to have to sort of get used to the fact that they're not going to be kicking 117, 118, 119 in games. So there'll be a certain amount of that. But again, I think, you know, they have a very shrewd management team. Their players are intelligent footballers. So I think they should be able to sort of get used to that and navigate that eventually. But yeah, look, the aspect in terms of, you know, getting stronger, getting fitter as well, you know, all those things, you need to make gains. And the one difficulty they might have this year, they don't. So typically you would have used your sort of November, December to get in the gym and put on some pounds and sort of condition yourself to go up that level, you know, to play at that senior, intermediate or senior level. They don't have that this year. So obviously they've been taken over. They're still in championship mode now. So they're going to have to be creative in terms of how they physically ready themselves to play at this intermediate level. But look, I think they will. I think they will. And look, whether they win it or not next year, probably might be beyond them a small bit, but I certainly expect them to have a big say in it.
I'm looking forward to having Ger Flanagan on in the next few weeks to tell us from experience how Bal did it. He'd love that, how Bal went from junior, intermediate to senior. Just a couple of stats as well while I think of them that I heard on the other pod. John Riley telling us Kilmina averaged 6 points a game over the course of the season, the championship season, and only conceded 3 goals. Paul Grodin, take a bow. My God, what an achievement. And one of those, of course, came in the dying seconds of the All-Ireland final on Sunday. Drakey, to finish, if you've been in a Mayo football conversation in the last few weeks or months, at some stage you'll have talked about, we need to find a midfield partner for Matty Ruan. We need to find an understudy for Matty Ruan. You got to see Jack Carney have one of his auditions in Croke Park on Sunday. He leaves with a Man of the Match award and an All-Ireland medal. Did you see enough to suggest that 2022 might be a summer, might be a season when Jack Carney gets significant minutes with Mayo? Or Jack's a young guy, under 20 last year. Does Jack have a little bit more developing to do before he becomes the senior intercounty footballer we think he can become?
Yeah, well, he will have more development to do. There's no question about it, right? He's a very, very young guy. You know, he's probably certainly hasn't filled into his frame yet, even though he's, you know, he's a good, strong fella for his age. Certainly more to be, you know, certainly more gains from that perspective. He'll certainly get fitter and stronger without doubt. But look, I would really, just to go back to it, answer your question, it's difficult to say, right? So you don't know. You don't know until you put him in that situation. So the hope would be over the next couple of weeks that he does get some minutes and some significant minutes, so that, you know, we can see, so we can say yay or nay in terms of whether he's an option this year. But in terms of last weekend, he was head and shoulders, you know, above anyone on the field. He looked like a county footballer. Let's look at it from that perspective. And in terms of, you know, his attributes, right? He has everything you want from a midfielder. I look at him and I'm reminded of sort of Brian Fenton. I'm reminded of, and his name escapes me now, Connor Glass, right? A big, strong, mobile, athletic midfielder who can go up and down the field, who is very comfortable in possession, who is very, very good off either side, left or right hand, can tackle well, can block well, can kick points. Now, he's not at Brian Fenton or Conor Glass's level yet, but he's that type of player with that type of engine. So I think, you know, the ceiling with this lad is massive. I would love to see him in the next few weeks to see if he is a viable option for us. If he's not this year, I expect him to be midfield for Mayo. If not this year, over the next couple of years, and I do expect, all going well, he will be there for us for the next decade or so. I do think he's that good.
Drakey, if we were young, free, single, and maybe 10 years younger, I'd say I'll meet you in Kilmina in a half an hour. But unfortunately, that bus has left, that ship has sailed for you and I. We are heading, though, to what we're now calling the smoking section. That's the area of the members podcast where, whether you smoke or not, we will head for a few minutes to talk about the burning issue of the day. The reason the guys decided to call it the smoking section, I think, is because, as everybody knows, that's where the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, usually tends to come out late at night. And it's where tonight Drakey is going to let some burning issue off his chest for all the Patreon podcast members. For everybody else, thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show as much as we did. We covered a lot of ground. Well done again to Kilmina. Enjoyed the celebrations. And we'll be back again next week with another Mayo News football podcast. Bye for now.